companies can survive economic downturns. They can survive a lot of things as long as we all are in it together.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime executive coach and professional recruiter and best-selling author. Let's get into it. Greetings and welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm Carol Schultz. Today we have Paul Paikin with us, founder of Vablet, a sales enablement tool for life sciences and medical device sales teams. We're going to get into more about how he is evolving his workplace. So, Paul, can you take us back to the beginning and what inspired you to start Vablet?
Oh, it's easy. I was actually meeting with a friend from high school that teaches PhDs how to be more creative. This was the day before the iPad came on the market. And he said, the iPad's going to change how people collaborate. I go, okay, that's interesting. And then I get on the JetBlue flight. And then Steve Jobs is holding an iPad on the cover of Newsweek. And I'm like, cool. And I go, they have 6,000 apps coming. And then the next day I woke up at 6 a.m. and I went to the Apple store and my 13-year-old daughter came with me. And they let us come in and touch it for 5 minutes because we had to go back and wait in that really long 3-hour line.
I love it.
So I'm in the store and I go to purchase two, one for my developer and one for me. And I was going to say, what's a good game? Right. I figured that'd be a good start. And they said Plants versus Zombies. We start downloading it, but we didn't finish downloading it. We left the Apple store. I drove to one of my coder's houses and I'm like, Mike, we're going to be building for this. And I hand him the iPad. And then my daughter said the game downloaded and the game started to play. So I'm like, well, Apple figured out Wi-Fi and make it very easy to connect to Wi-Fi. We get home, we hand the iPad to my 7-year-old son, and he's playing Plants versus Zombies all the way to Los Angeles. So for an hour and a half long, not one are we there yet. And I figured this device is different. No one ever wanted to touch a computer before. And physically, that's how I manipulated it. And it was intuitive, solved Wi-Fi, and it worked offline. So I go, this is awesome. And then I went to bed and my daughter had woken up and put the ABC Player app on the iPad. And I go, that's it. I want to put a video player app on the iPad that I can add content from a corporate perspective and control content on these iPads from anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. So came out with the name Video Tablet, Vablet. And that's where our name came from. We started development in April of 2010. And then we launched on December 16th of 2010 into the App Store. My vision was different than where we are today. My vision was you'd walk into a doctor's office, they would hand a tablet, you'd sit it in your lap, and you'd watch a video on whatever medical procedure in whatever language you resonated with would work. And I thought that would be like a great thing. We learned selling doctor by doctor was not going to be very easy. Selling to pharmaceutical companies, not that that's not a heavy lift,
yeah,
would be easier. So we pivoted our marketing to going after the medical device market, not the doctors who would consume us. And that was really how we began our path in 2011. Though I do believe in a chairside entertainment system, it's just not really a focus for us at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So you are calling into specifically life sciences and medical device companies. So pharmaceuticals are considered life sciences?
Yes, they are. But there are many more medical device companies than there are pharma companies. And in Irvine, California, where our company was started, we had UCI and then you have UCSD. These are both universities known for their medical. So there's a lot of medical device companies in Southern California. So that was also our total addressable market that we could physically visit was very dense by staying in the medical device industry, where pharma is more New Jersey and Chicago.
So are these companies purchasing from you and reselling? Kind of walk me through what that looks like.
No, we're directly brought in typically by the VP of sales or marketing to help the salespeople be more productive or compliant. We're very compliant. We can guarantee it's the right version of the file wherever you are in the world. So we typically are trying to solve problems for the sales teams. Initially, we were solving problems, global sales teams, not domestic, because in China and in India, cellular wasn't everywhere, and why iPads didn't have cellular in the early days.
Right.
And there weren't hotspots. So we were rolled out globally by a lot of our clients And domestic was the last piece where they actually rolled us out. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting, and they paid for us out of their paper budget. Instead of going to a trade show with all these documents, Bayer saved, they said $1 million of budget they would have at trade shows for paper. Mm-hmm. Imagine that can be replaced with a dozen iPads.
So you pivoted a little bit from beginning who you're selling to till where you are now. What would you say, as you said, you kind of launched everything the end of December of 2010, but I think probably really launched in 2011, right? Currently, you have, I think, including yourself, 6 core employees. Is that correct?
Right. We have a core team, and then we use an outside marketing team for one aspect. And then we have an outside team for QA. And then there's another outside team for our certifications, our ISO, our SOC 2, our HIPAA.
Yeah, right.
Our GDPR.
Got it. So as the CEO, we'll get into some of the details, but as a CEO, how have you evolved your workplace since the beginning over the last 14 years?
Well, okay, we're actually a 25-year-old company. So in 2001, mm-hmm. when I started Myotic, that's the company that owns the IP of Valblet, everybody always worked in the office. I had all these brilliant UCI students as my original programming staff, and everybody worked in the office. And then when we started to build Valblet out, we, same programmers, and they asked, traffic is really bad in LA. We don't necessarily want to make that drive. Can we work partially remote? Mm-hmm. So we went from just one day in the week of the office, and we've been that way for over a decade, where everybody would come in on Mondays, and that would be the days to brainstorm and go through stuff. So it evolved with COVID, right? When no one came into the office at all, I would go in every day with my son because we wanted to get out of the house to do our stuff. Mm-hmm. And now we're beginning to go, well, I moved during COVID away from everybody else. I'm on the East Coast. They're all on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. But we're going to start having, quarterly meetings, everybody on board in one location just to go over.
Yeah, I think you and I talked about that when we had our initial phone call.
So we just had our staff meeting a week ago and it was wonderful. It was really good to see everybody, but the ability to be able, and once again, I was with all the core developer staff, just to be able to ideate and do ideas back and forth and in real time be mocking up. And I mean, we created months worth of work in a day, because we're all in the same room. And then because the complexities of running an app that runs on iOS, Windows, Android, and web.
Yeah.
Sometimes to make sure everybody on all the respective teams does what they're supposed to do, it's really easy. We just have to, what we realized is I didn't bring in our marketing people into our company staff meeting. So on the next one, the people that help us with our outbound, I'm going to bring them into the fold as well. And I'll just make it, instead of a day and a half, we'll make it 2.5 days. We'll do a day of the marketing, and my programmers like the marketing aspect of what we do and the colorization and font. So I'm just going to make it a bigger pool next time.
Yeah, we did talk about that in our prior call. I'm really glad to see that you're doing that. I think it's super important just to help improve your culture, solidify it, you know, when everybody can actually sit in the same room together and really get to know each other and break bread, so to speak, right?
Oh, and breaking bread, we all went out to lunch for an hour and a half, we were communicating with each other. And I think breaking bread is a very old tradition that everybody should still keep doing. Mm-hmm.
You had talked about going, of course, like so many companies did, 100% remote during COVID. How long was it until you went back to the hybrid environment?
Really, we haven't fully gone back to hybrid.
You haven't?
No. Once again, because the core team, okay, I'm going to praise them because they're coders, which I know some people don't praise their coders, but because everything is a task and everything has to be logged into we use Jira. So everything has to be logged. Everything they have to do has to be there. I don't have to micromanage anybody. They've all been with me for a while, so they're self-managing. So I don't think physically they need to see me, but I talk to them all the time.
Yeah.
So the hybrid, I don't think they would enjoy the hybrid because these are the guys that don't need it. We will be adding more salespeople in the fall, and they'll be reporting to our CFO, who's based in Irvine. Mm-hmm. And Michael will definitely have in-person weekly meetings with them. So I think the programmers were just a little different animal that we can hop on Teams or Slack or anything and just communicate. But I think the marketing team, yeah, needs to be with leadership in the same room. So we're going to be working on that in about 3 more months.
That's awesome. That's a good segue for me to talk to you a little bit about what would you say your biggest bottleneck to growth is right now?
I would assume we're like a lot of companies. We're all investing in AI with no ROI from I have to be careful when I say that. We are getting ROI from AI because our coders are more effective. They're coding quicker, fewer bugs, better documentation, but we're investing in other AI. Like we're adding features to Vablet that we hope will open new markets to us. So all this AI money that we're paying, we're not getting ROI on it yet.
Yeah.
So it's one of the funny worlds we're in is we don't know, because like AI, we love it, but it's costing us a fortune. And then when we do the new agreements with all of our customers for 2026, who's willing to pay for AI?
Right.
And our clients are like, we want AI, but we don't want to pay for AI. And I'm like, well, why not? And you're like, well, we're going to be using Copilot by Microsoft. And I said, we're a platinum partner with Microsoft. We have a very good relationship with them. I'm like, can Vablet access Copilot? And then Microsoft said no, but in a not yet kind of way. So that I think is their vision. So if I'm in Vablet and I'm writing an email, and if Abbott is paying for Copilot, for example, I would much rather take that email and just, once it's exposed to us, like we can do with Apple Intelligence or Azure AI Studio, I can take that email, but run it through their Copilot, then their compliance and their regulations and whether
get
it's
dumped
redacted,
right into it.
Get dumped in. And then that onus isn't on us. And then their IT now actually is in more control of the content that the salespeople are sending out. So I think it's a win for our clients. We just need Microsoft to enable developers to access Copilot, again, in a very secured way. So we can already access their Outlook. So we think Copilot, it's not a far stretch. They just need to allow us to do that. And I think adding AI for our non-Copilot customers, the Gen AI to help a salesperson say, thank you for a meeting today. And what I love about Gen AI is in the prompts that we've developed, if I don't have a follow-up step, it'll put a little mark. Please put follow-up step here. So a salesman can just walk out of the meeting. And so, but it's just investment in AI. Like we're trying to do notes, like this call is being transcribed. I can see it, but I'm trying to do that offline on an iPad. So the doctor's voice never goes up to the cloud, and trying to do all of this offline. This is what costs us money and time.
And
it's like hitting your head into the wall, but we know it's the right thing to do. If I'm recording, okay, regulated industries, you talked about that when you launched us. We also are used like in private equity. If four of them are talking about a deal, they don't want that conversation streaming to anybody's server.
Correct. Yeah.
If the iPad does speech to text and makes a note, I don't think anybody's going to complain. But they don't want it leaving that device in a way that can't control it. So we're getting there. It's like anybody in AI. Everything is evolving. It's evolving very quickly. And it's like the .com in 1999. There were a lot of competitors to eBay, but only eBay just survived. So I think we'll see fewer LLMs in a few years from now than we have now. It'll settle down. So it's everybody's a cowboy, but we have customers with real needs and real compliance that we have to address.
So would you say that this situation with Copilot currently would be the biggest thing that if solved would make the biggest impact in your business growth, or is it something else?
Oh, no, business growth. We have a new technology that will launch us.
Okay.
So Vablet, we specialized in medical device companies because prior to launching Vablet, we had TVs in doctor's offices where they would control the videos that were being played. So we always thought frontline workers were considered medical workers. I was at a Microsoft conference and Microsoft said, frontline is any worker that doesn't work at a desk. So the total addressable market for people that are frontline workers, they said is like 32 million people in the US are frontline. That's a lot more than there are pharma sales reps. So I have a friend that works in the cleaning industry and they have 110,000 cleaners. Just imagine if every cleaner's phone have the ability not only to have their forms and their LMS, their training content and their instructions, but now imagine on the same phone, we could tell if they were impaired by alcohol or cannabis just by looking at a phone. So now you just sign into work, you spend 2 minutes, I can make sure that you're not impaired, and you go your day. So we're going to add another piece of functionality to Vablet, which is kind of unique, all AI, 5 years of development in it. Once again, this AI with no ROI, but we're really, really close. So we think changing what we can do on a phone, besides just LMS content, everybody can do that, right? Presentation content, everybody can do that. We do it really well with the sync. But now if you couple that with, and we can test your employees for drug use as an indicator, if we the term is technically not negative. So if you're showing something, so you're not negative, you'll need a formal drug test. That's fine. But if that guard doesn't need to get pulled out of the building to go get a test and come back, they can just spot check anybody. So we're just enabling more technology for use on your phone, kind of in an odd spin, but it's still compliant. It's still recording data. It's still presenting data.
Right.
Securely transmitting it. It's the heavy lift is all the compliance that we're really good at. So this is fun. It's just been taking a while to get people to that 0.08 number and then having them follow directions. And we've been doing that for 2 years. We're getting pretty good at it. We don't know, but we think that'll open a new market. And also, I also believe with all the big changes to rules and regs, we'll be a lot more popular in Europe for cost reasons.
Yeah.
We're already in Europe a lot, but we're seeing more indications out of Europe right now than we are seeing domestic. And you can't guarantee good Wi-Fi or cellular and high-speed cellular for presentations. So we're really optimistic about where things are going. But if we can get a bigger market in the U.S., get out of life sciences and pharma. Everybody in pharma has a sales enablement solution, whether they call it revenue enablement. Everybody has one. There are a lot of medical device companies that are springing up. We love medical device companies because maybe they have 10 salespeople today. They could have 400 people in three years if it takes off, and they need the same compliance that a big person has.
Right.
So we're continuing to focus on medical device and in terms of marketing, but we believe that once we get our software as a medical device technology running, that'll open up the TAM for us. Mm-hmm.
So do you even have it in beta yet, Paul?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah, you do. Okay, so you've got people testing it.
We've got people. Our problem is sounds funny, it's performance. We want the test to be done in under 2 minutes, and we're between 4 and 6 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Ideally you want it in a minute. But
of course.
So we're trying to, but what we also learned in our journey, depending on what kind of employee, if there's somebody who's on the clock, once they punch in or on your phone, they won't mind spending between 2 and 4 minutes to do a test.
Sure.
If you had to do it before starting your shift, then to try to get that down to a minute would be really critical.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do a minute accurate enough. So we think 2 to 4 is our zone. But right now, to record the test takes 2. So if I process it and it takes 4 to 6, I'm over the window.
Yeah.
So now we're optimizing the vectors and working with whatever performance we can to get it down so it's instant.
Interesting. So how is your, like I said, we talked about you have a real small team, but how is your team structured? I mean, is there an executive team?
There are 2 of us on the executive team.
Okay. You and your CFO?
Yeah. And Michael and I took a company public in 2000, .com.
Okay.
So we've been together a while, but we're flat. Titles don't, I've never had any real meaning to me. When I meet with all my technologists, Michael's in the room with us, which is good. And then he'll deal with the salespeople and I'll deal more with the techs, but I like being flat and I've had a much bigger team. And right now, until all the AI is done, it's the sales and marketing people that I think need more handholding.
Yes.
Rightfully so. Sales is very difficult and it's not getting easier. And today with the self-guided buyer's journey, it is very difficult when you have a platform that's 15 years of development to explain it in 2 minutes. It's better just to get on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do this and this and this and this and this and this? And we were like, yes. And so we're to educate salespeople on a complex tech product, yeah, it takes a village.
Mm-hmm. It does. So, you know, you had mentioned the, you know, exorbitant, my word, not yours, amount you're spending on AI now. And of course, you haven't gotten any ROI back from it yet. So how has that been, you know, affecting your ability to increase revenues, if at all?
Oh, it slowed down in our marketing effort in 2025, especially because we paused a lot of things at the end of 2024 in marketing because we had massive clients that were going to come on board. And with the changes in Washington, our major prospects mm-hmm. of everything's on hold. And that's what we felt is new business, people are waiting. Old business, things are going forward really quickly.
Yeah.
So yes, so we need more in terms of marketing. But like I said, the investment that we've been making, we believe is very wise mm-hmm. and prudent. We have to prioritize what we have first. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned hiring salespeople in the fall, and I'm assuming this is for your, you know, to get out there and sell your new product to this massive number of frontline workers, right? Companies who employ those people. What is that growth going to look like, you know, from, let's say, fall on through the next, you know, year or two, do you think? How many people are going to be looking at bringing on?
In terms of a sales staff?
Mm-hmm.
The vision is 5 total. 1 for New York, Chicago, LA, San Francisco, and Miami.
And who's doing that right now, currently, sales?
Our CFO oversees the one salesperson that works for Michael.
So you have 1 salespeople and you're going to be adding 4 more. Okay.
Yep. But it'll be a new strategy. But I mean, look, between mm-hmm. HubSpot and our website, things are working. And our go-to-market, because everything right now has always been hyper-focused on medical device.
Right.
It'll be a different animal. And when you sell to medical, it's a different sales animal than selling to a security guard company. And that is our hope is, you know, there are a lot of security guard companies in the US.
Yes, there are.
We've talked to people in the DOT. Selling to the government is a different kind of animal. And in this world, I believe you stay in your lane. You find somebody who's really good at selling into government or really good into channel. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
And we'll tap into them.
Yeah. I mean, in all the years I was a professional headhunter, you know, I did not often do anything in government because we had people who specifically did that, you know, DOD or civilian. Usually not both.
Correct.
It's a different sale.
And for the government.
Because often selling to, you know, DOD, you're dealing with clearance and all sorts of other things.
Right. And that's what makes it tricky is we have to be ADA compliant if we're dealing with the government. We need to be other things instead of just being HIPAA compliant is work. Right. So let alone ADA and make sure all the fonts are the right size and everything. But there are a lot of people that are experienced in selling to the government. So we know people that write the drug policy for the US DOT. And they're like, well, if you could deliver this, we can introduce you. But that doesn't mean we still know how to sell or get a contract in. Mm-hmm. But there are so many great organizations that we know can help us. We just need to deliver the MVP and say, look, you can check your pilots before they fly.
Yeah.
And that's not, I'm not knocking pilots, trust me, put my life in their hands. But that's our goal is to make life safer or the people working on the pipelines or the people that are repairing aircraft. I do not want them impaired when they're fixing a plane.
I don't disagree. I can tell you a story, but I won't.
We all have stories. Yeah. And the problem in the world right now, and this is in law enforcement, is marijuana is legal in 37 states in the US. The hair test is no longer valid. Mm-hmm. And you're in Colorado, not really a fair test. There is an oral test, but it's not very common. Mm-hmm. So people are struggling. So if we can contribute just to see that mentally you're not where you should be, once again, it's a lot of math. Not as much as AI as you think, but there's a lot of math in it to see are you normally where you should be and how much data do we have. So we live in a very interesting and dynamic times, but sales is not getting any easier. So we have to get smarter in what we do.
Exactly. How sustainable is your current approach long-term, do you think?
We've been in business for 24 years. It's working. The sustainability, once again, very funny story. My parents owned a dress manufacturing business my entire life. They rebranded right in the middle. And having a lifestyle company to them was wonderful. In software, I know everybody wants us to grow between 40 and 70%, which we have not been. So we're sustainable exactly how we are. But if we're going to take off and go into this new market, at that point, the burn will increase and we'll need more revenue. So we have been sustainable. We're very solid. Our clients have been with us a really long time. But I'm also, I have an MBA in finance. My CFO's former forensic accountant. We treat the cash in the bank like blood. You need enough blood or you're going to die.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you, you know, as you grow, have the two of you talked about, well, we're going to need to take some, you know, outside revenue, whether it's a loan from the bank, you know, whatever that might be.
Yes. And we actually get tons of emails saying, well, my auditor can get a loan for X whenever. So yeah, we don't, I don't mind financing with debt. That's what I was taught when I went to grad school.
Yeah.
But we don't want to take debt until we know that I can get ROI from the debt.
Yep.
And that is our goal, is once we know that it works.
And has the thought of, you know, venture capital or private equity even come into the conversation?
I have many friends in private equity. We don't think we'll go to VC. We thought they were a little too, we'll just say needy.
I thought you were going to say greedy.
Yeah, onerous. Lot of words. Yeah. We probably will definitely go to private equity because our goal will be aligned with them. Once we have this tech working and then we can hockey stick, we will be better off with somebody who has a lot more capital than we have. Mm-hmm.
But I have to imagine you're not going to let them put in anywhere, you know, in the over 50% range, because you'll, of course, lose complete control of your company.
And that's what they wanted in 2011. They wanted.
It doesn't surprise me.
Between the equity and the option pool. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not giving you 51%.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it with it. I would never do that. Yeah, right.
And when Snapchat went public, I think Eric Spiegel only owned, what, under 10% of it. And yes, we all watched the social network movie early on with the non-dilution clauses and our so no, I'm not giving up. Yeah. When the time is right, I would rather be small division of a really large company than not. So going to PE when everything is ready, just to really package us up for a major sale. Mm-hmm. That's always been our goal. And in 2010, when we built the business plans, right, we had exit strategies for companies that just didn't have sales enablement platforms. And that included like Box and Oracle, companies that I really respect. So we don't know, but once again, I know how to run a software company. I know how to do sales. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how to sell a business to a private equity firm, maximizing my value, not minimizing it. So we will definitely go to PE when the time is right. And luckily in New York, where I live now, there's a lot of PE firms in walking distance.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What would you say? So that's kind of stay on the, you know, somehow getting, you know, financial backing, right? What does that mean? Should you take it, do you believe, for your growth trajectory?
Oh, instead of growing at 40 to 70% at the end of this year that we're projected, it'll be growing in the thousand. Right. We think the growth rate, we pick up a major security guard company, right? That's a lot more than all the sales reps that we have in pharma since we started. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I'll need a bigger engineering team.
You'll have to become like a real life company with employees.
Well, I love my employees. But,
I'm teasing you.
But we're more, but like the partner that I have that helps us develop logic that if it's one-off, like our Outlook connector, we don't need to do that. Let's find an expert. Yeah, they can scale really quickly. So if I need expertise in edge or whatever, I have this great network. So we're ready to scale. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of vaporware. I believe.
MVP. I don't disagree. I worked with so many startups in my career. Believe me, I'm with you 100% on that.
So once we get it to work, then I'll let the money guys help us figure out how to make all of us very wealthy. But right now, if it doesn't take off and we don't get the alcohol working and we just stay where we are helping medical device companies cure lives, I'm
then
fine.
That's what you'll do?
Yes. Because we like what we do. We like each other. And because we picked, right, the reason why we focused on, originally we were going to focus on three industries. Life sciences, the talent industry, because we were in Southern California. I figured, wouldn't it be great for all these movie companies to have digital scripts and not paper? And we met people at Paramount, NCAA. No, they treat scripts like toilet paper. There was no, we couldn't persuade them. Mm-hmm. And then we also went after private equity. We've had Swiss banks as clients. Banks are very, very demanding clients. We do like our private equity clients, but there are a lot of other industries with frontline workers that we just have not had the resources to go after that.
Well, with you and your partner, you know, your CFO and one salesperson, you know.
But in medical device, we've been fine with it. And yeah, like I said, but pre-COVID, we had more, right? We had four salespeople before COVID, and then the real reset hasn't really happened.
Yeah.
You know, we're hoping, but we haven't seen this massive uptick.
I'll say what I always say about hope. It is not an effective strategy.
No. So we're right. Building.
What happened to the other three salespeople during COVID? Did you just not have the business?
Didn't have the business. So we got one of those COVID grants. I kept one of them on board. But in 2 years, she couldn't close anything. Certain things had to be done. But staffing a sales staff with a tool to go visit people, that was not a priority.
Well, sure. Right.
Now, our lab companies that had lab products that were out, they did really well during COVID.
Sure.
Like Eurofins.
Because they still needed to operate their businesses.
Right. And then our chromoform reps. But what changed a lot during COVID is the sales reps, right, we added an LMS component because the sales reps were no longer being brought into corporate to be sold. They were being trained remotely. So we added LMS capabilities. And that's how COVID changed the world. One of our clients trains physicians with Vablet. And then once they pass the LMS class, they then get all the marketing content. So they're using Vablet in a very innovative way because they're not flying all the doctors back or going to these massive meetings. So I don't think, I mean, the economy's recovered, but I don't think methodologies have recovered for in-person, but I think the trend is slowly reversing and people want to be out. And in New York, we can just see, right, the pedestrians on the street at night and in which neighborhoods. And it seems like a lot of neighborhoods have a lot of pedestrians out all times of the day. So people are out.
They certainly do here where I live. No, nobody's changed their lifestyle whatsoever.
In Denver, they're still going out.
Yeah, people, they've been going out for years.
New York was scary during COVID, like Fifth Avenue.
Right, I know. There's a whole lot more people, you know, living on a 12-mile long island, right? So, you know, then thank goodness we have here in Denver. So anyway, so let's say you cannot get this down to under 4 to 6 minutes. Are you SOL or are you going to release it that way?
We'll release it that way. But
you will.
The test to tell if you're impaired versus the nystagmus test.
Yeah.
The NASA has a test, which they've done in 5 minutes to tell if an astronaut is fatigued. Other people have chopped it down to about a minute 45. So I can tell that Carol's not Carol. I don't know what's wrong with you. So the answer is if they say, you can't do alcohol, but you can do this. And I just know that Carol's normal today. That's fine. So we are, everything is multi-pronged with what we do.
Sure.
We have that in work, which is really, really exciting. We have other tests to see if people are impaired. The problem with impairment, especially with cannabis, is there's no breath analyzer to say, oh yeah, she's a little stoned. That doesn't exist.
It doesn't.
So we're constantly looking at studies, once again, because of the great AI technology, which is out there. We're mining all these research papers that say, when you're fatigued, it correlates to having so many drinks. Or Alzheimer's people or Parkinson's people are showing these. And you have to gamify it to make it fun.
Right.
So yeah, we have a dot that appears and we're looking at what percent of a millisecond you're tapping and how often are you? So we're looking at proven science and research. So if we can't get alcohol down, but some people are going to want to say, you know what? They're already on the clock. If it's 4 minutes, it's 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, with COVID, we waited 15 minutes.
Right.
So if the test remotely will ping you, but we're trying to not do that. So we'll pivot how we market it. But
sure.
No, we're not dead at 4 minutes. We've gotten down from 10 to four. But on the other side is, look, Apple's going to announce a new phone probably next month for October. It's going to have a more powerful processor. Okay. So if we've gone from a four-year-old phone at 4 minutes, maybe the new phone will do it under a minute. Under a minute, we're golden. So we can be lazy and wait for silicon horsepower to make our product viable. But between now and then, we're going to do everything we can to make it as quick as humanly possible.
Well, and the reality is that just, you know, then that assumes that it should that work that everybody has to have that brand new phone, right? I mean, I just in December upgraded from an 11 Pro to a 16 Pro Max.
Right.
You know, it had, you know, five versions had gone by, or how many ever versions, you know, because I don't get phones very often. I don't need to. That's just not who I am. But so would you then assume that, I mean, companies aren't going to buy their employees brand new $1,200 phones just for this test?
They won't. So the question is, but if it's 3 minutes on an older phone.
Yes. Then that's totally reasonable.
The other part of the phone, though, there's something more significant that you're missing is with each model of phone, the cameras are getting better and better.
Correct.
So we actually have it working on a 12. That's our bottom line for the test. And then we have a patent pending that uses the cameras. And the better cameras on smartphones, it seems weird with all the selfies that are taken, are the cameras that look away from you, not the camera facing you.
Oh, interesting.
So for one of our tests, you hold the camera backward and we lock in on the eye and we get a really good picture of the eye. And that was designed to work on Android phones. And that could work on a $200 Android phone, because an Android phone at that price point will have at least one good forward-looking camera. The selfie camera may be 4.8 megapixels, but the other one's more. Yes, we're adapting our tech to work pretty much with iOS 15 and above, Android 11 and above. Android's already at 14. So I don't think 3 years old is too much to ask, but we're not going to make it slow for the newest of the new. On a 16, it's got to be done in a minute.
Yeah.
So that's what we're working on.
Paul, is there anything we haven't talked about regarding your company, your workplace, that you want to talk about before we sign off?
I think it's really important to have passion. And I think my guys truly really enjoy being with each other. And the first hire I ever did was in 1987. I was a manager of a travel agency. I hired a woman named Rosa, who now is retired. She's like almost 70. It was her nephew that became my second employee way back when he was a freshman at UCI, because she was like, he's a little lazy. He really should work a little bit. And she was like, I know how you treated me as a boss. I think you'll do the same. And
awesome.
So the answer is, we live in a very interesting time, but you got to love what you do. And if you come into work every day, look, we're